This podcast has the catchy title, Important Plans on Being a Christian and End-of-Life Care. It's based on a recent short talk I gave at St Oswald's Church in Croxley Green at the invitation of the minister there. Whatever your religious persuasion, I think you will find this helpful as the principles are generic and reflect our shared humanity and desire for kindness and autonomy in difficult times. I'm speaking about my experience as a general practitioner, that is a GP, working with patients in the community and as the GP to a nursing home delivering hospice-type end-of-life care. When I first spoke at St Oswald's, the novel coronavirus was growling ominously on the horizon, but as I speak today at the end of March 2020, we are starting to see new cases every day in the practice where I work, and some of our patients have already died. So whilst this talk has application generally, the global pandemic we find ourselves in attenuates the issues. Death is at the door for more of us than at any time since the world wars. I'm not sure why you've chosen to listen today. Maybe it's because the topic is a bit different, or maybe it feels relevant to you at this time in your life, or maybe it's the pandemic. Death is not an easy topic to talk about, either publicly or with our friends and family, unless I suppose we feel like it's a long way off or concerning someone else. Benjamin Franklin said there were only two things certain in life, death and taxes. But there is a glaring difference between these unpleasant truths. Taxes are collected regularly and at fixed points in the calendar. We generally know how much and when it's due. But the date and manner of our death is an unknown quantity. Most of us, about two-thirds, will die at the end of a period of illness and declining health. Few of us will die completely unexpectedly in our sleep or whilst out walking the dog. Increasingly, we're asking to be allowed to die at home, which I applaud. But that takes more than a bit of planning. More about this later. Doctors, like me, are frequently asked to predict when someone with a terminal or life-threatening illness will die. You know we are notoriously bad at this. I've worked for many years as a GP, and that's included care at the end of life. I've helped care for dying people in hospitals, care homes and the community. I say helped loosely because where I work, there's usually a team of doctors, nurses and carers involved. I'm not often at the bedside when the moment of death arrives. The role of the GP is more behind the scene, talking beforehand to patients about their wishes, talking to their loved ones, and liaising with both nursing staff and chemists, arranging prescriptions and paperwork. So what is it actually like to die? Have you seen anyone die? In the movies? Usually violent. I remember as a child with my friends trying to emulate being shot and killed, writhing about on the floor dramatically. In my experience, whatever our religious background, God is kind to us all at this time. The senses often seem to be dulled, and I think this helps. In the gospel account of the death of Lazarus, we see how Jesus, our Lord and God, feels about such a situation. I'm going to read from John chapter 11, verse 17 to 36 in the New International Bible. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Now, Bethany, where he was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. But now I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." Martha answered, "I know he'll rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die, and whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe this?" "Yes, Lord," she replied. "I believe you are the Messiah, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." After she'd said this, she went back and called her sister Mary aside. "The teacher's here," she said, "and is asking for you." When Mary heard this, she got up quickly and went to him. Now Jesus had not yet entered the village, but was still at the place where Martha had met him. When the Jews who'd been with Mary in the house, comforting her, noticed how quickly she got up and went out, they followed her, supposing she was going to the tomb to mourn there. When Mary reached the place where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet and said, "Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died." When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. "Where have you laid him?" he asked. "Come and see, Lord," they replied. Jesus wept. But then the Jews said, "See how he loved him?" Here I see God's heart for humanity. We know that he goes on to enable Lazarus to be resurrected, but it's his tremendous kindness to the grieving family that stands out to me. I believe I can trust this kindness when I reach the end of my life. I'm going to share the account of a patient I was privileged to look after a couple of years ago. I very much felt God's kindness to the patient and his loved ones at that time. For the sake of patient anonymity, I've changed the details. Max was elderly with incurable cancer. He had a lot of pain as a result. He was frail, but faced his death bravely. He and his wife wanted him to be at home if possible. Over the next few weeks, he became confined to bed on hefty doses of morphine. The district nursing team installed a comfortable hospital-sized bed in the lounge. Other aids, such as a commode, were added as soon as they were needed. Palliative care nurses and staff from the local hospice provided a night sitter so his wife could rest at night. Carers attended to his physical needs as his wife, who was elderly and disabled herself, was too frail herself to manage this. Friends came and went, along with the local minister, who was a good friend to Max. I wrote up prescriptions and popped in to check on how he was doing every couple of weeks. Clinicians write up a list of anticipatory or just-in-case medicines, including sedatives and strong painkillers. They can be given at short notice in case the regular medications aren't enough to control distressing symptoms. I completed a DNAR form, a red-edged form authorising a natural death. It gives carers and the ambulance service the authority to allow a death to take place without obligation to try and resuscitate the person. Max became too weak to eat and drink. Carers used swabs soaked in glycerin to keep his mouth comfortable and moist. He enjoyed classical music on the radio and a view of his garden from his bed. The last time I visited him, an old friend from the golf club was there. He and Max had always enjoyed their golf, followed by a whiskey afterwards in the clubhouse. Max's friend wanted to know if they could share a last drink together. "What if I dip an ice lolly in the whiskey and we let him lick that?" Brilliant, I thought. Fantastic idea. I smile every time I think of this moment. Time ticked by and Max became more muddled and slept for longer and longer. He was comfortable. His wife was reassured by the help around her. He stopped breathing and died in his sleep in the early hours of the morning a few days later. What makes facing death more difficult, and what can I do about it? Whether you or your loved ones are facing death, the biggest challenge in my experience is accepting the facts. In the 1970 hit song The Boxer, Simon and Garfunkel sing, "Still a man hears what he wants to hear and disregards the rest." Increasingly, we're living longer and dying of old age or frailty. This is a victory for modern science and healthcare, but death, when we're old or frail, is hard to predict. There's no clear trajectory, as there might be with untreatable cancer. An audit of the deaths in my medical practice last year showed that less than a third of the deaths were due to cancer. Most were related to frailty and old age. So how can you plan when you don't know what to expect? Most of us who catch the new coronavirus will recover, even those admitted to hospital. Those needing more than oxygen, who need to be put on a ventilator, seem to fare less well. I suggest that we try and approach the problem like we might our pension. Years before we retire, we're encouraged to save for our pension. We might not know exactly when we will retire or what retirement will look like or feel like, but we try and prepare as best as we're able anyway. This analogy breaks down if we think about retirement as sitting on a bench looking at a beautiful sunset. Death does not have the same appeal. If we're older and we've had more than one emergency hospital admission in the past year, the chances of us being in our last year of life start to rise steeply. That's just a fact. Make a will if you haven't already, but also make time to think about what's important to you in the last months of your life. If you have a faith, make sure you have a clear conscience. Think about talking to your faith minister or a trusted friend. If you have any chronic medical conditions, such as heart conditions or diabetes or chest complaints, I suggest you start by trying to hear what medical staff might be saying to you or your loved one. Medical staff don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. We try to be honest, but we're trained to respect people's wishes, and that means withholding the truth if we think you don't want to hear it. Apart from listening, please talk. Talk to your loved ones about what you would like to happen if you were dying or ill and unable to express your wishes yourself. Many of us slip into a coma or are delirious and too muddled mentally when we're ill to think clearly. As I said earlier, I think that might be God easing our distress. But unfortunately, the distress passes to our loved ones. They can find themselves desperately flapping about, trying to make decisions about your care, not knowing exactly what you'd prefer. And don't assume that what you would want is what your loved ones want. This is a common mistake. If you have communicated your wishes clearly, it helps prevent arguments between your loved ones. Subconsciously, they will be imposing what they think they'd personally want onto your care. Loved ones, please talk to each other and reach a shared understanding. Get help if possible if there are divisions. If there's conflict amongst family members, consider formalising a plan such as in a living will or power of attorney. In the UK, you can visit the Coordinate My Care website. It's a free, fantastic tool developed by an oncologist when she realised how fragmented her mother's care was at the end of her life. What is there to talk about? I hear some of us saying. I don't want to talk about death. Talk about whether you'd like to be looked after at home or hospital. What, if anything, you want on the radio or TV? What food you don't like? Who has a spare key to the house and manages the money? Who will look after the cat? Whether you'd like resuscitation to be attempted when your heart stops or to be allowed a natural death, and so on. You may want to consider discussing views on funerals too. There's no size fits all. Try to see it as establishing and documenting the details of where you'd like to be cared for, who you trust to speak on your behalf, and what you'd like to be done. These three questions, where, who, and what, are a good foundation for discussion. But what if you don't think you can face the truth or are so horrified at the idea that you can't talk about it? There's nothing tougher we face. Many of us will remember the exact times and places we heard bad news. It's as if the world stopped still. Have a look at the Dying Matters website. It's a British site. I'm sure other countries will have something similar. You'll find lots of practical tips and advice there about things to talk about and how to go about it. As believers, I think we have access to God at these times in a very special way. One of my favourite Bible promises is in James 1 verse 5 from the NIV. If any of you lacks wisdom, you should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault, and it will be given to you. This tells me that we can ask God how to raise the conversation and what to say when our brain freezes up. There are many verses about God granting us great strength when we need it. One of my favourites is Psalm 18:29. Where David says, "With your help I can advance against a troop. With my God I can scale a wall." It goes without saying, we will never face a bigger wall than death. If you can start your journey of acceptance and talk about what's happening, you will find a new peace and lightness. The Apostle John said, "The truth will make you free." You will be set free to make the most of and enjoy the times you have left. If you find this hard to imagine, I can certainly recommend American surgeon Dr. Atul Gawande's powerful book, Being Mortal. You might want to think about who might be alone in your faith community or neighbourhood. think about how they may be feeling about these sorts of things and who they have or don't have that they can talk to. Ask God to give you wisdom to know how to ask them if they need help or someone to talk to. I'd like to hear of any resources you might recommend. And finally, remember the image I shared earlier of Jesus with his friends Mary and Martha. God loves his creation and is kind to his people. Thank you for listening.